Nobody can be too Jewish.
That's exactly it. You got it.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Professor Ami Moyal, president of Afeka College of Engineering, discussing Israeli innovation on coronavirus detection and response. We'll also have a visit from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Please email your comments to us at 2JewishRadio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at 2JewishRadio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and 2 Jewish.
Shalom. In this period of eternal coronavirus strangeness, we Jews are beginning to wonder just what exactly we're going to do about the High Holy Days, now just 6 weeks away. There's a general consensus among Jewish professionals that in-person services for Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur are not happening this year, that most of our Days of Awe experiences will be virtual by Zoom or Facebook Live or some other online platform. This will mark the first High Holy Days in history, I believe, in which very few Jews will be able to attend the most important and well-attended religious services of the entire year. And that's another level of weird for Jews, especially rabbis and cantors. I don't quite know what to compare it to be honest, although we congregational rabbis and cantors, and I am both, don't like to share this information too freely. Most Jewish holidays, including Shabbat, can be celebrated pretty darned well at home. There are special foods to make, prayers you can say and sing at the table, candles to light, and many enjoyable observances that don't require attending a synagogue. During a period of enforced isolation like this with our families, you can make the case you actually can do Jewish just as successfully now as you ever could. You can make challah at home each week, set a beautiful Sabbath table, prepare special recipes, learn and sing zmirot, Shabbat songs sung around the table. You can have your children prepare skits based on the Torah portion of the week, if you'd like. You can sleep in on Saturday, enjoy a leisurely Sabbath lunch in the backyard with socially distanced friends or relatives. And at the end of Shabbat, you can celebrate with a spiritual and beautiful Havdalah ceremony. None of this requires a rabbi or a synagogue or a cantor or even a minyan. The same might be said of Passover or even Shavuot, certainly Sukkot, in which outdoor dining is always required by God and Jewish tradition, not just COVID-19. And if, heaven forbid, we are still more or less sheltering in place come December, well, Hanukkah is a very home-based holiday, with lots of ways to celebrate in close proximity of family. So you can easily do Jewish without going to shul if you set your mind and heart to it most of the year. But the one set of Jewish holidays you really can't observe properly are the High Holy Days, Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. They are not really all about family, although we have festive meals together, of course. They are about coming to shul or temple and asking for forgiveness for our sins. The Yamim Noraim, the Days of Awe, are all about hearing the shofar, listening to inspiring, exalted music, paying attention to serious sermons about the most important things going on in our lives and in our world. Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur are synagogue festivals, deeply tied to the experience of going to shul, with the expectation of focusing our attention on our own need to improve ourselves. They provide an opportunity to see other Jews we may not have seen recently, to feel the surge of energy and attention that attends everything in this season of the Yamim Noraim, the High Holy Days, the days of awe and inspiration. We put on our finest clothes and try to become the finest versions of ourselves, and we do so in our Jewish congregations. So creating this experience, or any version of it by means of Zoom or Facebook Live or some other form of internet broadcast, presents a huge challenge to rabbis, cantors, synagogue professionals, and so on. It's definitely not the same thing attending Rosh Hashanah or Yom Kippur services at your synagogue as watching a little screen that looks like the Brady Bunch, or staring mutely at an oddly rectangular mini image of people conducting services in a tiny little box. It's clear that the need to protect the health of congregants, and for that matter, everyone, must be paramount. But something clearly is going to be lost when the High Holy Days become just another way of watching a, frankly, somewhat amateurish TV program. Now, some people nationally have seen this as an opportunity to offer professionally produced music videos for the High Holy Days to congregations around the country. And some synagogues are buying in. That is, they're using music produced by professional musicians and producers somewhere else, paying them to give a little slickness to their Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur services. In other words, you don't have your normal people doing homegrown music, involving volunteers, teaching the melodies, and so on. You just cut back and forth between professionals in a studio somewhere and your own rabbi or service leader. It's a little bit like you invite the Mormon Tabernacle Choir to sing on video at your Easter or Christmas services, and then the local minister does the boring English readings in between the professional musical numbers. I'm not sure what to say about this approach, except that it makes me wonder why anyone wouldn't just choose to watch a better overall service put out by one of the super-rich congregations in New York or Los Angeles, since they have the money to hire top singers and musicians all the time, and they coordinate with them easily for the High Holy Days. The point of having a synagogue service is that it's your people, the clergy you know and respect, leading a meaningful and beautiful religious experience. The rabbi and cantor who will visit you when you're sick, who will celebrate your big simchas with you, who will assist when someone needs to be buried. I don't really know how all this stuff will play out this year, except to say that it definitely is more difficult to connect people in a congregation that's gone all virtual. I hope that this year is a one-off, that it only happens like this for these High Holy Days of 5781, and we don't have to make a career of doing everything in this very distant way. But I also hope and pray that those of us who have the sacred task of leading our congregations in prayer manage to do so in a way that's meaningful, beautiful, and representative of what our own congregations represent best about Judaism. To play us in this morning, here's an early beginning to our High Holy Day music, an arrangement by my father, Rabbi and Cantor Baruch Kohan, who sings on this, of Tekaba Shofar, Sound the Great Shofar of Freedom, heralding a new year that truly brings us all together, not virtually, but for real.
Tekaba Shofar Gadol Leherutenu. Mesales lekabez galuyotenu, bekabtenu yahar mehera, mehera, me'ava kan kotaretz me'atzenu.
Teka, teka b'shofar gadol lecherutenu, Sones the cabet galu yo tengo the cabet no ya tan mehera mehera
me arba tan fotar me ya tengo te ca de sofar da do
Ve kabetzeinu yachan mehera, mehera,
me'arba kan fotaret le'atzeinu. Teka, teka,
teka, bishofar gadol.
kabetzeinu yachan mehera, mehera, me'arba kanfot haaretz le'artzeinu.
That was Tekaba Shofar, sound the great shofar of freedom as we begin to prepare for the coming High Holy Days, arriving in 6 weeks or so in this very strangest of all years. When we return in a moment on to Jewish, our guest, Professor Ami Moyal, the president at AFEKA Tel Aviv Academic College of Engineering, will discuss Israeli innovation on coronavirus detection and response, and much more, and share some fascinating breakthroughs. Find out what they are when we return in a moment here on To Jewish.
There's magic in the air at this special place for fun, a place where fortune smiles and Tucson comes alive. This is Casino del Sol, the best games in town, amazing dining and top-flight entertainment. This is a heart that beats with excitement, with passion and beauty. It's all waiting for you at Casino del Sol. This is the soul of Tucson. Presenting sponsor of University of Arizona Basketball, Enterprise of the Pascua-Yaqui Tribe.
Congregation Beit Simcha, the House of Joy, a new Jewish synagogue in northwest Tucson of the Catalina foothills, celebrates a great array of services, classes, and events, even in this strangest of all summers and falls. Established by passionate, caring congregants and me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, Beit Simcha has created a vibrant community that strives every day to serve God with joy. A new progressive congregation in northwest Tucson in the foothills, Beit Simcha is open to everyone throughout the metropolitan area, providing weekly Shabbat services, youth and adult education academy courses, social justice opportunities, outreach, and cultural Jewish programming. Beit Simcha's synagogue is located at 2270 West Ina Road, just west of La Cholla, near the entrance to the Foothills Mall property. Services, classes, and events are open to everyone in normal times. In these days of coronavirus tsoras, you can join us every Friday night on our Facebook page for Shabbat evening celebration services at 6:30 p.m. and Saturday morning Shabbat services at 10 a.m., all with me leading them. A very limited number of congregants can attend Friday and Saturday by reservation only, wearing masks and social distancing. Everybody else can be there on Facebook. All of our Adult Education Academy classes are on Zoom. You can access them by going to our website or emailing me at rabbi@beitsimchatucson.org. Our synagogue's at 2270 West Ina Road, west of La Cholla on the north side of Ina, at the entrance to the Foothills Mall property. We're not in the mall, but on the south side in our own building. And for now, we are a fully functioning virtual congregation on Zoom and Facebook with new classes beginning this week. Email me at rabbi@beitsimchatucson.org to get more information. Learn about Congregation Beit Simcha to attend services, our great religious school, which is starting up soon, and our Torah Tikes program, Bar and Bat Mitzvah, Confirmation, and a rich array of Adult Education Academy courses, all taught on Zoom and with limited personal availability. And, of course, all of our services on Facebook. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimcha, Tucson.org, or call 520-276-5675. That's 276-5675, BeitSimchaTucson.org. Join me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, in the newest and fastest-growing Jewish congregation in all of southern Arizona in its exciting beginning years. We are delighted to welcome to Two Jewish our guest this morning. Professor Ami Moyal is a speech processing specialist and president of AFEKA College of Engineering. And they have developed a remarkable new technique for pre-screening people for coronavirus for COVID-19. Good morning and welcome to Two Jewish.
Good morning. Nice talking to you.
So one of the great challenges is determining if people might have coronavirus, if they've been exposed. Tell us a little bit about your methodology, but your background is in speech technology, speech and hearing.
Yeah, maybe a little bit about my background. I completed my PhD in electrical engineering, focusing on signal processing One of the main signal that we are processing is the speech signal itself. Originally, about 20 years ago, it was used for human-machine interaction, speech recognition, which iPhone Siri is based on. Later on, intelligence organizations have been using speech processing to try to monitor activity around the world. But in the last 2-3 years, we find ourselves at AFECA. We have established a center that is focused on language processing, written and spoken language. And we are applying various speech processing tools. By the way, I spent, before joining the academia, about 15 years in the high-tech industry developing products. Once we look at the speech signal that our brain is analyzing on a daily basis once we talk to each other, the speech signal include a lot of data. The content itself, the language, the dialect, the sex, the age, a lot of data can be extracted from the speech signal. And it seems that even our emotional state is influencing the speech signal. And recently, in the last, as I mentioned, 2-3 years, the medical market has started to show interest in the speech signal itself. It seems that various diseases like in the lungs, flu, problems with the vocal cords, and even Alzheimer has an influence on our speech. So we are using various speech processing tools and AI, artificial intelligence, machine learning tools, trying to imitate how our brain is working in order to analyze the speech signal and to try to find the symptoms of diseases. If I'm looking at the future, there'll be an application running on our mobile that will analyze every phone call that we are having on the cellular. And once we're finalizing the call, our speech will be analyzed and we may receive an SMS. Something has been changed in your voice recently. We recommend that you go for testing, meaning as a monitoring tool, not replacing the doctors and the medical investigation, but as a pre-screening in order to find problems or diseases at their very early stages.
It's a fascinating concept, and I'm sure that the application goes beyond COVID-19, but we'll talk when we come back about some of the really remarkable aspects of this technology. I will return in just a moment here on Too Jewish. Do you know someone who personally made a major difference for the whole Jewish people? An individual who's done important work for Klal Yisrael and deserves to be highly recognized for that effort. As president of the Kohan Memorial Foundation, I'm grateful that the modest cash awards we started more than 10 years ago have grown into a substantial amount of unrestricted funds given to winners, with the help of donors like many of you. The foundation, named for my grandparents, Rabbi Samuel S. Kohan and Irma Kohan, makes these awards for important service to Klal Yisrael, the entire Jewish people. That service can be in one of four activities: unity, education, creative arts, or rescue. Past Kohan Award recipients are remarkable people who've done outstanding work. If you know someone who qualifies for a Kohan Foundation Award, please go to kohanaward.com, kohanaward.com, and fill out the simple nomination form. That website is kohanaward.com. Nominate an individual or donate yourself. Do it for the whole Jewish people. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, a kvetch or a kvel, please email us at tojewishradio18@gmail.com. That's T-O-O, jewishradio18@gmail.com. Or visit our website at tojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website, streaming us from there, downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcast. Top 10 in America, according to Moment Magazine. We've just had our 100,000th download on Podbeam. We welcome back a randomly occurring feature of Too Jewish, our Zen Judaism segment, Haikus for Jews, Kohans, or Koans of Wisdom. Is one Nobel Prize so much to ask from a child after all I've done? And now an entirely appropriate haiku for summer in Arizona. Today, mild schwitzing. Tomorrow, so hot you'll plots. 5-day forecast. Feh. That was Zen Judaism, Haikus for Jews, two koans, or koans of wisdom, on Too Jewish. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
You know, obviously there are Jewish communities everywhere in the world, and Bangkok is a prominent stop on the Israeli backpacker journey, and lots of visitors come there. And while I don't think they had a strong native Jewish population at any point, there's certainly need for Jewish services there.
Right. I don't know that Thailand ever had an indigenous Jewish community at all, the way China sort of did and India certainly did. But it has been such a fixture on the post-army tour of young Israelis and backpackers from all over the world. And Bangkok is really like this beacon. And you have to go through Bangkok to get to any of the islands or the mysteriously attractive beaches or whatever. So,
or the north with its temples and
right.
elephants and stuff.
Chabad, as we both know, has representatives everywhere in the world, but especially mm-hmm. in places where there are large numbers of Jews and or Israelis passing through. And the Chabad House in Bangkok is very well known for providing a wide range of social services, not only like spiritual guidance or holiday meals or Shabbat dinner, but even a place to sleep if you need it, legal advice if you get into trouble, whatever. They do a lot of good things. And recently, the rabbi there decided that the landlord was raising the rent to really punitive astronomical levels that he couldn't afford. He wasn't sure that it was anti-Semitism. Usually in Christian countries, there's no such thing as anti-Semitism, although there are a few very well-known exceptions. I meant to say in non-Christian countries.
Buddhist countries.
I meant to say in
non-Christian countries. Yes, yeah, right. I think Christian countries have
right.
a certain legacy
right, right,
of anti-Semitism.
Right. So he decided to raise funds to build a building that would be owned by Chabad and that would be a multi-story building that could serve all these purposes of, you know, not only bed and breakfast, but synagogue, a place to... They have Passover Seders with like 1,200 people.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a huge operation.
Yeah.
So what's interesting is, how does Chabad conduct fundraising? Frequently on Facebook. And Facebook, because it's open to everyone by its nature, invites comments from everyone. And some of the comments seemed outright anti-Semitic. Like the rabbi said, I'm having trouble raising the money I need. One person said, maybe you should just go back to Israel.
Hmm.
Like, don't be an imperialist and stay in Bangkok and try to spread your faith, basically. A person, coincidentally, had a very Germanic-sounding family name. But there were other comments of like, okay, Rabbi, you said you provide these services to Jews. What about non-Jews? Aren't we also human? And more than one person wrote kind of nasty things like, I've never received any communication from Chabad that didn't include a request for funds, which I can tell you is factually not true. The vast majority of written communications I get from Chabad are
Don't
not fundraising.
Right, that's true.
But several women said, I will not give a donation to an organization that doesn't count me as a human being for the sake of determining whether or not there's a minion. And the person running this fundraising campaign is a woman who works for Chabad in Israel, and she is capable of answering at least in Hebrew and in English. And this was one that she just didn't even dignify with an answer, because obviously you don't want to give, you don't have to give, but you're not going to determine how any group of Jews in the world defines who gets counted for a minion, who gets counted as a Jew, whatever. I mean, every congregation, every group of Jews, every sub-movement in the world is going to do that in their own way.
You mean Jews are going to have their own opinions about how to do things?
Maybe.
Amazing. Tom, thanks very much. We'll talk next week.
I look forward to it.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week, Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie New, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. Three men are about to be executed, an Italian, a Frenchman, and a Jew. They ask the prisoners what they want for their last meal. The Italian says, pasta primavera, fresh, so delicioso. So they get it for him. He eats it, and then they shoot him. Next, they ask the Frenchman what he wants for his last meal, and he says, filet mignon, so tender. So they get it for him. He eats it, and then they shoot him. Finally, they ask the Jew what he wants for his last meal. He says, strawberries. They're a little stunned. Strawberries? It's midwinter. Those aren't in season now. And the Jew answers, so I'll wait. That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. This week we read the portion of Re'eh, fourth Sedra in the book of Deuteronomy, which follows a sequence of marvelous Torah portions with yet another remarkable text. Re'eh includes one of the most radical statements in the whole of the Torah. Ki yeh v'cha evyon me'achad achecha be'achad sharecha. If there is among you a poor man, one of your brothers, within one of your gates, in the land which the Lord your God gives you, you shall not harden your heart or shut your hand from your needy brother. Ki fatoach tiftach et yadcha lo. You shall certainly open your hand to him and give him enough for whatever he lacks, whatever he wants. This commandment is not simply to provide for the needs of the needy, not just to alleviate their suffering, but to give them what they actually want, sustenance, security, a decent life. It is much more than we seek to provide in our American society, in which the safety net seemingly has as many holes as net, especially now. It is more than the social protesters in Israel wanted for their society. It is a powerful, dramatic statement. Open your hand. Surely, give the needy poor what they ought to have. This is part of a strong economic agenda in Deuteronomy. No one is supposed to accumulate great wealth or enormous power, and no one is to be left destitute. Most importantly, our moral obligation is to see to it that none of our brothers and sisters is left without what they need in order to survive. Herein lies a foundational lesson on the morality of giving. Give not only what someone needs in your opinion, give her or him enough to live reasonably and with dignity, and do so in a way that preserves the recipient's dignity. That's the true measure of tzedakah, of living justly and in righteousness. Judaism at its heart is pragmatic ethics. We're trained to make the world morally better by practical action. After exploring the Talmudic dictum that even those who receive charity need to give something to those with even less, the rabbis conclude that tzedakah is meant to be a percentage of your income, not a hard figure, and that the same percentage, whether it's 10% or 5% of gross income or some other number, should be given in good times and bad, even in crazy, strange, weird times like these COVID-19-dominated ones. It's true that when there is less income, there will be smaller absolute amounts donated, but the percentage, and thus the integrity of the individual's moral commitment, are to be preserved. So, open your hand and give a percentage of your gross income to help others. Do so freely and generously in good times, in tough times, at all times. It's the Jewish thing to do. It's the right thing to do. We return on to Jewish our guest, Professor Ami Moyal, head of the Afeka Academic College of Engineering in Tel Aviv, will share some of the breakthroughs made there in the area of virus detection. Fascinating subject indeed, and very important right now. Hear all about it when we return on Too Jewish in just a moment.
We continue with our Too Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
There was a catastrophic explosion in Beirut last week that decimated the famous port, killing around 200 people perhaps, injuring 5,000, destroying many blocks of Lebanon's capital city. The video of it, available immediately all over the world, well, it's horrifying to watch. And like many other people who think they know something about the Middle East's tortured politics and horrible regional antagonisms, I assumed two things immediately. What exploded must have been some huge cache of munitions belonging to Hezbollah, the terrorist gang that has such a strong presence in Lebanon and fought Israel to a draw in the 2006 war and in several confrontations since. And I also thought that the Mossad, Israel's fabled secret service, had something to do with the explosion. Well, like many other people, including our president, it appears that my initial assumptions were just flat out wrong. The story is much more complicated and convoluted than that, which, given that it's Lebanon, shouldn't surprise anyone. It began 7 years ago in September 2013 when the Russian-owned but Moldovan-flagged cargo ship the Rosas set sail from a Black Sea port in Batumi, Georgia, en route to Mozambique, carrying 2,750 tons of ammonium nitrate. Ammonium nitrate is a chemical used in fertilizer, but it is also highly explosive and used to blow things up and as a component in explosive weapons. In October of that year, the cargo ship was forced to stop in the port of Beirut with engine problems. After inspection by Beirut's Lebanese port control, the Rosas was found to be unseaworthy, and it was forbidden to set sail. 8 Ukrainians and 1 Russian were aboard, and with the help of a Ukrainian consul, 5 Ukrainians were repatriated, leaving 4 crew members to take care of the ship. This is 2013 still. The owner of the Rosas, the Cyprus-based Russian businessman Igor Grichushkin, went bankrupt. The people who chartered the boat lost interest in the cargo, and the owner abandoned the ship. The Rosas quickly ran out of provisions. The crew were unable to disembark because of immigration restrictions. Creditors then obtained 3 arrest warrants against the ship. Lawyers, what would the world be without lawyers, argued for the crew's repatriation on compassionate grounds due to the danger posed by the cargo underneath them still aboard the ship. An urgent matters judge in Beirut allowed the crew people to return home after having been stuck aboard this ship for a year. By order of the same judge, that dangerous cargo was then brought ashore. This is 2014 by then, placed in Hangar 12 at the Beirut port, where it remained for the next 6 years. Various customs officials sent letters to judges requesting a resolution on the issue of the confiscated cargo. They proposed the ammonium nitrate be exported or given to the Lebanese army for use in explosives or sold to the private Lebanese explosives company. Port and customs officials twice sent letters in 2014, 3 times in 2016, and once again in 2017. One of the letters sent in 2016 noted the judges had not replied to previous requests and pleaded, in view of the serious danger of keeping these goods in the hangar in unsuitable climatic conditions, we reaffirm our request to please request the Marine Agency re-export these goods immediately to preserve the safety of the port and those working in it, or to look into agreeing to sell this. No one ever responded. And so the cargo of ammonium nitrate was simply held by the Lebanese authorities in a huge warehouse near the port for 6 full years. Exactly what happened last week is still not completely clear. It's under investigation. The story the Lebanese are peddling is that there were fireworks stored near the warehouse. Why that would be, what holiday or event the Lebanese were saving these fireworks for, no one has suitably explained. But the rest of the sad tale is that somebody was welding a door in the building where the fireworks were stored. The welder missed or something and somehow ignited some fireworks. The fireworks then shot off, shooting off lots more fireworks, bad enough, but not disastrous. In fact, many firefighters were trying to put out the initial fireworks fire when some of the fireworks smashed into the nearby big warehouse full of ammonium nitrate. That explosion was so catastrophic, it registered as a 4.2 earthquake on the Richter scale, according to the Jordanian Seismological Observatory. The blast was felt in northern Israel and in Cyprus, an island 150 miles away. It was orders of magnitude larger than the largest non-nuclear bomb ever dropped on anyone by anyone. That explosion overturned cars, stripped steel-framed buildings of their cladding. Within the port, the explosion destroyed a section of shoreline, leaving a crater nearly 400 feet in diameter. Witnesses said homes as far as 6 miles away were damaged. Up to 300,000 people are homeless because of the explosions. The grain elevator was destroyed, exacerbating food shortages caused by the COVID-19 pandemic and a severe Lebanese financial crisis. 15,000 tons of grain were destroyed, leaving the country with less than a month's worth of grain in reserve. The damage extended over half of Beirut, costing above $10 billion. That figure will probably go up. 90% of hotels in the city were damaged, 3 hospitals completely destroyed, 2 more suffered damage. Dozens of injured people brought to nearby hospitals could not be admitted because of the damage to those hospitals. Notably, Israel offered aid via United Nations channels. Al Jazeera described this as an unusual move, given that Israel and Lebanon have no diplomatic ties and technically are at war. Despite years of Israeli-Lebanese conflict, including the 2006 Lebanon War, both Israel and senior Hezbollah officials, their archenemies, ruled out any Israeli involvement in the explosion, which shows incredible cooperation by enemies at a time of great tragedy. Definitely, this was not the Mossad's work. Several countries expressed solidarity by lighting up landmarks and monuments in the colors of the Lebanese flag, including the Burj Khalifa in Dubai, the Asadi Tower in Tehran, the Great Pyramids of Giza, and most amazingly of all, the City Hall in Tel Aviv, Israel. May God help the rescuers to find those still trapped. May effective medical and food services in Beirut be available speedily and soon. And may compassionate aid help the many victims of this terrible tragedy. In news much closer to home, the front window of the New Mexico Holocaust Museum in downtown Albuquerque was shattered in an act of vandalism. The incident took place during the funeral of Georgia Congressman John Lewis on July 30th. He was, of course, a great civil rights pioneer and advocate. The museum's window featured a poster of a large photo of an early 1960s civil rights march. The head of the museum does not, of course, think this was a coincidence. Executive Director Leon Natker said the vandalism makes the point for why it's necessary to have this Holocaust museum, why now more than ever this kind of cultural institution is necessary in our current dialogue. The museum's logo says it is eliminating hate and intolerance one mind at a time. I hope so. Closed for renovations at the time of the attack, the Albuquerque Holocaust Museum will reopen September 1st. And in Queen Creek, Arizona, in Maricopa County, 4 men were arrested hanging a banner reading "Hitler was right" on a railroad bridge last week. They were seen hanging the banner on the bridge Saturday morning, caught posing and taking pictures with the sign. The banner included a link to a website containing bigoted and explicitly racist pronouncements. Maricopa County Sheriff's Office so far is not pursuing hate crime charges against the men, ages 27 to 38. They were charged with misdemeanor criminal trespassing since the area is marked no trespassing. 3 of these racist idiots are from Arizona. 1 is from Oklahoma. People who don't have a strong enough sense of history of their own identity gravitate towards hate communities that give them this little hit, a feeling they're accepted, said Paul Rockauer, the executive director of the local Jewish Community Relations Council in Phoenix area. But unfortunately, this leads down a path to nowhere. And in Richmond, Virginia area, 2 historic cemeteries, 1 Jewish, 1 African American, were vandalized with graffiti featuring 777, shorthand for the Triskel hate symbol. The vandalism was discovered last week at Richmond's Evergreen Cemetery and at the Sir Moses Montefiore Cemetery in Henrico County on the border with Richmond. The triskelion looks like 3 interlocking sevens, was one of many ancient European symbols appropriated by the Nazis and later by white supremacist groups, according to the ADL. The 777 stand-in for this symbol was spray-painted throughout the Montefiore Cemetery, founded in 1886, a burial place for many Jewish immigrants. Evergreen Cemetery houses multiple African-American leaders from the post-Reconstruction and Civil Rights eras, including Maggie Walker, first African-American woman to charter a bank in the United States. These acts of hate degrade and denigrate our way of life. They are designed to stoke fear in the hearts of both Jewish and black communities. We stand together with our African-American neighbors in proclaiming that these cowardly acts have not and will not break us, said the Jewish Community Federation in Richmond. And finally, Pete Hamill, the legendary New York newspaper man, celebrity columnist, and author, died last week at the age of 85. His book, Snow in August, was one of the first that my own Jewish book group read years ago. It was a really well-told Golem tale set in Brooklyn in 1947, the year of Jackie Robinson's breaking the color line in baseball and much else. That book has held up, as is Pete Hamill's excellent, tough writing in general. He wasn't Jewish, but he sure understood anti-Semitism and quite a lot about Judaism. May he rest now in peace. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews Round the World. We welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning. Ami Moyal is head of the Afeka College of Engineering, Academic College of Engineering in Tel Aviv, and an expert in speech processing and speech engineering. We were speaking earlier about the capacity, the potential to analyze every phone call on your cell phone and being able to detect How does it detect that you might be in the early stages of a disease? What changes? Can you describe it in a layman's terms?
First of all, we are speech and artificial intelligence experts, meaning we are developing the technology and the tool to assist the doctors. The content and the symptoms are well defined by the doctors, and we have been in the last 2 months in very close contact with physicians that treat current COVID-19 positive people, patients, and they are experts in respiratory diseases. And we gain a lot of knowledge in regarding the virus infection on the speech signal, but our project is very focused on trying to identify potential COVID-19 carriers and try to break the chain of infection. And it seems that most of the COVID-19 carriers are, their early symptoms is in the vocal cords, swelling of the vocal cords, and throat infection. And that affects the speech signal, basically changing the frequencies that are included in the speech signal. Like when you're talking to a colleague of you over the phone, you can recognize that he has a flu because his voice changed. Maybe you cannot distinguish exactly what you hear and your brain analyze, but you can ask your colleague, are you having a flu? So similarly, we are trying to model these symptoms by two methods. One is distinct speech processing methods that are trying to identify change in your cough or breathing, and additionally analyzing the speech signal, the way that you speak, by artificial intelligence methods that actually are modeling the population. If we have a target population of hundreds of speakers that are COVID-19 positive and hundreds of speakers that are COVID-19 negative, we can train our systems, and the system is basically a machine learning system to try to imitate our brain by neural networks that are similar to the way that our brain is working. Once we are modeling these two groups statistically, a potential speaker that we don't know if he is COVID-19 negative or positive would talk to the application, and that would result with it's not a diagnosis, you know, it's a pre-screening tool. It will give a result if the system thinks it's COVID-19 positive and the percentage it is sure about the diagnosis. So if you're trying to prioritize your limited testing capabilities, such a tool can focus on the group that are potentially COVID-19 negative and send them to hospital for investigation by doctors.
So here's the huge question. How close is this technology to being able to be implemented? Because we don't really know how long COVID-19 is going to be around. But so far, we obviously have no solutions.
Yeah, excellent question. First of all, I may say that such tools can be appropriate for the second round of COVID-19 or for any future virus that may attack attack us. But currently, the main obstacle is technically trying to. We need recordings of hundreds of people in order to train our models. The technology is pretty ready. We used it in different cases of other diseases, Alzheimer's and throat problems. So we are pretty sure that we will receive acceptable results once first training the models. And the main problem, as I mentioned, is just that these days we receive a certain amount of several dozens of speakers from several groups that we have defined, and we are training our models these days. I think that in a matter of a week, we would be able to say if there's a serious potential in this method. And then we are going to a much larger collection. In this sense, I may mention that we have been establishing international efforts with several countries in Europe, that once the technology will show that it has potential for a mass market deployment, we are going to collect speech voices in several countries in Europe in order to accelerate the process. One last remark. From my experience, you can use such systems even if the percentage is not 100%. Let's take, for example, 80% correct recognition. Having no other tools to try to diagnose the COVID-19 positive carriers, even 80% good result is okay. The main problem would be false alarms of the system. We need to keep the false alarm, meaning saying that somebody is COVID-19 positive and he is not, to minimum. This is our main target. And trying to do it, we discovered that there are similar symptoms of COVID-19 positive to other diseases like flu. So we are collecting also speech samples from diseases like flu that has similar symptoms to COVID-19 in order to try to distinguish the group of COVID-19 positive from other groups, either healthy or carriers of other viruses.
And so this could be used, would there be an app that would go on your phone, or do people call in? How would the technology be applied?
I can tell you about our wishful thinking. okay.
Im yirtze Hashem.
Im yirtze Hashem, yeah. In my dream, I see an app on the cellular that every citizen on Earth can download and test himself as many times as he wants during the day. It's easy, it's accessible, and everybody can use. I guess it will take us a while before arriving there, because we still need to see that technology is working. We will need to go for trials in a targeted population to establish the results, but I think that along the way, it would be an app that everybody can download to his cellular phone.
I think it's an incredible idea and a valuable diagnostic tool, and who knows what other things it can be used for. I want to thank Ami Moyal for a great visit here on Too Jewish. Where can people go to find out more about Afeka and about the work that you're doing?
Where?
Yeah.
First, on our website at Afeka. Afeka is a college of engineering at Tel Aviv. On our website, and we have published a lot of content that can be found on the web around our research activity, and there is a dedicated website for the Afeka Center for Language Processing that a lot of data is there on our activity and research in the field.
Thank you so much. Bahatzlacha.
It was nice talking to you.
Nice talking with you. Thank you.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest and get a final musical play out.
There's magic in the air at this special place for fun, a place where fortune smiles and Tucson comes alive. This is Casino del Sol. The best games in town, amazing dining, and top-flight entertainment. This is a heart that beats with excitement, with passion and beauty. It's all waiting for you at Casino del Sol. This is the soul of Tucson. Presenting sponsor of University of Arizona Basketball, Enterprise of the Pascua-Yaqui Tribe.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Our playout this morning comes from the Israeli singer Eyal Golan, his hit Yamin Yagidu, Days Will Tell. Join us next Sunday. Our guest on Too Jewish will be David Beispiel, poet, memoirist, and author of a beautiful new book about being Jewish and from Texas called A Place of Exodus. My friends, may you have a healthy week, God willing. A Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace.
אם גופי חב עמוק את לכתך, אם אדם אחר יכיל גודל אהבתך, אם יהיה דומה מגע ידיו לידיי, לילות יגידו את חיי. אם עינייך ילטפו את פניו, חום גופך ימיס את לילותיו, אם תלחשי לו מילות אהבה, לילות יגידו אין כמוך אוי אהובה. ימים יגידו אם געגוע יתגנב אל תוך ליבך, אם בשקט אם אצל בקול את שמך, אם תלכי אני נשבע אני שלך אני איתך עכשיו שבוע. ימים יגידו אם געגוע יתגנב אל תוך ליבך, אם בשקט אם אצל בקול את שמך, אם תלכי אני נשבע אני שלך אני איתך עכשיו שבוע. אם לעזריך את עורר לצד מותך, עשית ראשי כשאבית על סף ביתך, אם אחפש דמיון פנייך בנשות הרחוב, לילות יגידו רוצה אותה קרוב. אם לעת שקיעה דמיין את קולך, אשיר לך שיר אקרא בשמך, אם בין שבילי הדרכים תשובי אליי, לילות יגידו, לילות יגידו רוצה אותה קרוב. אם לעת שקיעה דמיין את קולך, אשיר לך שיר אקרא בשמך, אם בין שבילי הדרכים תשובי אליי, לילות יגידו את אהבת חיי. ימים יגידו אם געגוע יתגנב אל תוך ליבך, אם בשקט אם אצל בקול את שמך, אם תלכי אני נשבע אני שלך אני איתך עכשיו שבוע. ימים יגידו אם געגוע יתגנב אל תוך ליבך,
sponsored by two Jewish radio programs, Tucson, Arizona.